drowning, and some more specific and gruesome details. My blood runs cold in my veins as I realize exactly what I'm reading. A death list. Julia nods. Every person who ever died fighting in the Lakelander War. Shade, I think, feeling my meal churn in my stomach. Something tells me he won't get his name in one of these. Deserters don't get the honor of a line of ink. Angry, I let my mind reach out to the desk lamp illuminating my reading. The electricity in it calls to me, as familiar as my own pulse. With nothing more than my brain, I turn it on and off, blinking in time with my ragged heartbeat. Julia notes the flashing light, lips pursed.
"Something wrong, Mayor?"
he asks dryly. "Everything is wrong." "I'm not a fan of the schedule change," I say instead, letting the lamp be. "It's not a lie, but it's not the truth, either. We won't be able to train." He only shrugs, his parchment-colored clothes shifting with the motion. They look dirtier somehow, like he's turning into the pages of his books.
"From what I hear, you need more guidance than I can give you."
My teeth grind together, chewing on the words before I can spit them out. "Did Cal tell you what happened?"
"He did," Julian replies evenly. "And he's right. Don't fault him for it."
"I can fault him for whatever I want," I snort, remembering the war books and death guides all over his room. "He's just like all the others." Julian opens his mouth to say something, but thinks better of it at the last moment and turns back to his books.
"Mayor, I wouldn't exactly call what we do training. Besides, you looked very good in your session today."
"You saw that? How?"
"I asked to watch."
"What?" "It doesn't matter," he says, looking straight through me. His voice is suddenly melodic, humming with deep, soothing vibrations. Exhaling, I realize he's right. "It doesn't matter," I repeat. Even though he isn't speaking, the echo of Julian's voice still hangs in the air like a calming breeze. "So, what are we working on today?" Julian smirks, amused with himself.
"Mayor?"
His voice is normal again, simple and familiar. It breaks apart the echoes, wiping them away from me in a lifting cloud. "What? What the hell was that?"
"I take it Lady Blanos hasn't spoken much about House Jacos in lessons,"
he says, still smirking.
"I'm surprised you never asked."
Truly, I've never wondered about Julian's ability. I always thought it would be something weak, because he doesn't seem as pompous as the others. But it looks like that isn't true at all. He's much stronger and more dangerous than I ever realized.
"You can control people. You're like her."
The thought of Julian, a sympathizer, a good person, being at all like the Queen makes me shake. He takes the accusation in stride, shifting his attention back to his book.
"No, I'm not. I have nowhere near her strength, or her brutality."
He heaves a sigh, explaining.
"We're called singers, or at least we would be if there were any more of us. I'm the last of my house, and the last of, well, my kind. I can't read minds, I can't control thoughts, I can't speak in your head. But I can sing, as long as someone hears me, as long as I can look into their eyes. I can make a person do as I wish." Horror bleeds through me. Even Julian.
Slowly, I lean back, wanting to put some distance between him and myself. He notices, of course, but doesn't look angry.
"You're right not to trust me," he murmurs. "No one does. There's a reason my only friends are written words. But I don't do it unless I absolutely need to. And I've never done it with malice."
Then he snorts, laughing darkly.
"If I really wanted, I could talk my way to the throne."
"But you haven't."
"No. And neither did my sister, no matter what anyone else might say."
Cal's mother. No one seems to say anything about her. Not to me, anyways.
"People don't like to talk about dead queens," he snaps, turning away from me in a smooth motion. But they talked when she was alive. Corianne Jacobs, the singer queen. I've never seen Julian this way, not once. Usually he's quiet, calm, a little obsessed maybe, but never angry, never so hurt. She wasn't chosen by Queen's Trial, you know, not like Ilara, or Evangeline, or even you. No, Tybe married my sister because he loved her, and she loved him. Tybe. Calling Tiberius Calor the Sixth, King of Norta, Flame of the North, anything with less than 8 syllables, seems preposterous. But he was young once, too. He was like Cal, a boy born to become a king. They hated her because we were from a low house, because we didn't have strength or power or any other silly thing those people uphold, Julian rails on, still looking away. His shoulders heave with each breath. And when my sister became queen, she threatened to change all that. She was kind, compassionate, a mother who could raise Cal to be the king this country needed to unite us all, a king who wouldn't be afraid of change. But that never came to be. I know what it's like to lose a sibling, I murmur, remembering Shade. It doesn't seem real. Like maybe everyone is just lying and he's at home now, happy and safe. But I know that isn't true. And somewhere my brother's decapitated body lies as proof of that. I only found out last night. My brother died at the front. Julian finally turns back around, his eyes glassy. I'm sorry, Mayor. I didn't realize. You wouldn't. The army doesn't report executions in their little books. Executed? Desertion. The word tastes like blood, like a lie, even though he never would. After a long moment of silence, Julian puts a hand on my shoulder. It seems we have more in common than you think, Mayor. What do you mean? They killed my sister, too. She stood in the way. And she was removed, and his voice drops. They'll do it again. To anyone they have to. Even Cal, even Maven, and especially you. Especially me, the little lightning girl. I thought you wanted to change things, Julian. I do, indeed. But these things take time, planning, and too much luck to count on. He stares me up and down, like somehow he knows I've already taken the first step down a dark path. I don't want you getting in over your head. Too late. 16. After a week of staring at my clock, waiting for midnight, I begin to despair. Of course Farley can't reach us here. Even she is not so talented. But tonight, when the clock ticks, I feel nothing for the first time since Queen's Trial. No cameras, no electricity, nothing. The power is completely out. I've been in blackouts before, too many to count, but this is different. This isn't an accident. This is for me. Moving quickly, I slip into my boots, now broken in by weeks of wear, and head for the door. I'm barely out in the hallway before I hear Walsh in my ear, speaking softly and quickly as she pulls me through the forced darkness. We don't have much time, she murmurs, hustling me into a service stairwell. It's pitch black, but she knows where we're going, and I trust her to get me there. They'll have the power back on in 15 minutes if we're lucky. And if we aren't? I breathe in the darkness. She hustles me down the stairs and shoulders open a door. Then I hope you're not too attached to your head. The smell of earth and dirt and water hits me first, churning up all my memories of life in the woods. But even though it looks like a forest, with gnarled old trees and hundreds of plants painted blue and black by the moon, a glass roof rises overhead. The conservatory. Twisting shadows sprawl across the ground, each one worse than the next. I see security and sentinels in every dark corner, waiting to capture and kill us like they did my brother. But instead of their horrific black or flame uniforms, there's nothing but flowers blooming beneath the glass ceiling of stars. "Excuse me if I don't curtsy," a voice says, emerging from a grove of white-spangled magnolia trees. Her blue eyes reflect the moon, glowing in the dark with cold fire. Farley has a real talent for theatrics. Like in her broadcast, she wears a red scarf across her face, hiding her features. But it doesn't hide a ruinous scar that marches down her neck, disappearing beneath the collar of her shirt. It looks new, barely beginning to heal. She's been busy since I last saw her. But then, so have I. "Farley," I say, tipping my head in greeting. She doesn't nod back, but then I didn't expect her to. All business.
"And the other one?" she murmurs.
"Other one."
Holland's bringing him, any second now. Walsh sounds breathless, excited even, about whoever we're waiting for.
Even Farley's eyes shine.
"What is it? Who else joined up?"
They don't answer me, exchanging glances instead. A few names run through my head, servants and kitchen boys who would support the cause. But the person who joins us is no servant. He's not even red.
Maven?
I don't know whether to scream or run when I see my betrothed appear from the shadows. He's a prince, he's silver, he's the enemy, and yet here he is, standing with one of the leaders of the Scarlet Guard. His companion, Holland, an aging red servant with years of service behind him, seems to swell with pride. "I told you you're not alone, Mare," Maven says, but he doesn't smile. A hand twitches at his side. He's all nerves. Farley scares him, and I can see why. She steps toward us, gun in hand, but she's just as nervous as he is. Still, her voice does not shake.
"I want to hear it from your lips, little prince. Tell me what you told him," she says, tipping her head toward Holland.
Maven sneers at little prince, his lips curving in distaste, but he doesn't snap at her. "I want to join the guard," he says, his voice full of conviction. She moves quickly, cocking the pistol and taking aim in the same motion. My heart seems to stop when she presses the barrel to his forehead, but Maven doesn't flinch.
"Why?"
she hisses.
"Because this world is wrong. What my father has done, what my brother will do, is wrong."
Even with a gun to his head, he manages to speak calmly. But a bead of sweat trickles down his neck. Farley doesn't pull away, waiting for a better answer, and I find myself doing the same. His eyes shift, moving to mine, and he swallows hard. "When I was 12, my father sent me to the war front to toughen me up, to make me more like my brother. Cal is perfect, you see, so why couldn't I be the same?" I can't help but flinch at his words, recognizing the pain in them. I lived in Geese's shadow, and he lived in Cal's. I know what that life is like. Farley sniffs, almost laughing at him. "I have no use for jealous little boys." "I wish it was jealousy that drove me here," Maven murmurs. "I spent 3 years in the barracks, following Cal and officers and generals, watching soldiers fight and die for a war no one believed in. Where Cal saw honor and loyalty, I saw foolishness. I saw waste, blood on both sides of the dividing line, and your people gave so much more. I remember the books in Cal's room, and the tactics and maneuvers laid out like a game. The memory makes me cringe. But what Maven says next chills my blood. There was a boy, just 17, a red from the frozen north. He didn't know me on sight, not like everyone else, but he treated me just fine. He treated me like a person. I think he was my first real friend. Maybe it's a trick of the moonlight, but something like tears glimmer in his eyes. His name was Thomas, and I watched him die. I could have saved him, but my guards held me back. His life wasn't worth mine, they said. Then the tears are gone, replaced by clenched fists and an iron will. Cal calls this the balance, silver over red.
He's a good person and he'll be a just ruler, but he doesn't think change is worth the cost, he says. I'm trying to tell you that I'm not the same as the rest of them. I think my life is worth yours, and I'll give it gladly if it means change. He is a prince and, worst of all, the queen's son. I didn't want to trust him before for this very reason, for the secrets he kept hidden. Or maybe this is what he was hiding all along. His own heart. Though he tries his best to look grim, to keep his spine straight and his lips from trembling, I can see the boy beneath the mask. Part of me wants to embrace him, to comfort him. But Farley would stop me before I could. When she lowers her gun, slowly but surely, I let go of a breath I didn't realize I was holding in. The boy speaks true, the manservant Holland says. He shifts to stand next to Maven, strangely protective of his prince. He's felt this way for months now, since he returned from the front. And you told him of us after a few tear-filled nights? Farley sneers, turning her fearsome gaze on Holland, but the man holds firm. I've known the prince since boyhood. Anyone close to him can see his heart has changed. Holland glances sidelong at Maven, as if remembering the boy he was. Think what an ally he could be. What a difference he could make. Maven is different. I know that firsthand, but something tells me my words won't sway Farley. Only Maven can do that now. Swear on your colors, she growls at him. An ancient oath, according to Lady Blanos. Like swearing on your life, your family and your children to come, all at once. And Maven doesn't hesitate to do it. I swear on my colors, he says, dipping his head. I pledge myself to the Scarlet Guard. Sounds like his marriage proposal, but this is far more important and more deadly. Welcome to the Scarlet Guard, she finally says, pulling away her scarf. I move quietly over the tile floor until I feel his hand in mine. It blazes with now familiar heat. Thank you, Maven, I whisper. You don't know what this means to us. To me. Any other would smile at the prospect of recruiting a silver, and a royal at that, but Farley barely reacts at all. What are you willing to do for us? I can give you information, intelligence, or whatever you might need to continue forward with your operation. I sit on tax councils with my father. We don't care about taxes, Farley snaps. She casts an angry glance at me, as if it's my fault she doesn't like what he's offering. What we need are names, locations, targets, what to hit and when to cause the most damage. Can you give me that? Maven shifts, uncomfortable. I would prefer a less hostile path, he mutters. Your violent methods aren't winning you any friends. Farley scoffs, letting the sound echo over the conservatory. Your people are 1,000 times more violent and cruel than mine. We've spent the last few centuries under a silver boot, and we're not going to get out by being nice. I suppose, Maven murmurs. I can tell he's thinking of Thomas, of everyone he watched die. His shoulder brushes mine as he pulls back, retreating into me for protection. Farley doesn't miss it and almost laughs out loud. The little prince and the little lightning girl, she laughs. You two suit each other, one a coward, and you. She turns to me, her steel blue eyes burning. The last time we met, you were scrabbling in the mud for a miracle. I found it, I tell her. To cement my point, my hands spark up, casting dancing purple light over us. The darkness seems to shift, and members of the Scarlet Guard reveal themselves in menacing order, stepping out from trees and bushes. Their faces are masked with scarves and bandanas, but they don't hide everything. The tallest one must be Tristan, with his long limbs. I can tell by the way they stand, tense and ready for action, that they're afraid. But Farley's face doesn't change. She knows the people meant to protect her won't do much against Maven, or even me, but she doesn't look at all intimidated. To my great surprise, she finally smiles. Her grin is fearsome, full of teeth and a wild hunger.
"We can bomb and burn every inch of this country down," she murmurs, looking between us with something like pride. "But that will never do the damage you two can do."
A silver prince turning against his crown? A red girl with abilities? What will people say when they see you standing with us?
"I thought you wanted..." Maven starts, but Farley waves the words away.
"The bombings are just a way to get attention. Once we have it, once every silver in this forsaken country is watching, we need something to show them."
Her gaze turns calculating as she measures us up, weighing us against whatever she has in mind.
"I think you'll do quite nicely."
My voice trembles, dreading what she might say.
"As what?"
"The face of our glorious revolution," she says proudly, tossing her head back. Her golden hair catches the moonlight. For a second, she seems to wear a sparkling crown.
"The drop of water to break the dam."
Maven nods with fervor.
"So where do we start?"
"Well, I think it's time we took a page out of Mare's Book of Mischief."
"What's that supposed to mean?"
I don't understand, but Maven follows Farley's line of thought easily.
"My father has been covering up other attacks by the guard," he mutters, explaining her plan.
My mind flickers back to Colonel Macanthos and her outburst at luncheon.
"The airfield, Delphi, Harbor Bay."
Maven nods. "He called them accidents, training exercises, lies. But when you sparked up at Queen's trial, even my mother couldn't talk you away. We need something like that, something no one can hide, to show the world the Scarlet Guard is very dangerous and very real."
"But won't that have consequences?"
My thoughts flash back to the riot, to the innocent people tortured and killed by a mindless horde. "The Silvers will turn on us, things will get worse."
Farley looks away, unable to hold my gaze.
"And more will join us. More will realize the lives we live are wrong, and that something can be done to change it. We've stood still for far too long. It's time to make sacrifices and move forward."
"Was my brother your sacrifice?"
I snap, feeling anger flare within me.
"Was his death worth it to you?"
To her credit, she doesn't try to lie. Shade knew what he was getting into.
"And what about everyone else? What about the kids, and the elders, and anyone who hasn't signed up for your glorious revolution? What happens when sentinels start rounding them up for punishment when they can't find you?"
Maven's voice is warm and soft in my ear.
"Think of your histories, Mare. What has Julian taught you?"
"He taught me about death, the before, the wars. But beyond that, in a time when things could still change, there were revolutions. The people rose, the empires fell, and things changed. Liberty moved in arcs, rising and falling with the tide of time."
"Revolution needs a spark," I murmur, repeating what Julian would say in our lessons.
"And even sparks burn."
Farley smiles.
"You should know that better than anyone."
"But I'm still not convinced. The pain of losing Shade, of knowing my parents have lost a child, will only multiply if we do this.
How many more Shades will die?"
Strangely, it's Maven, not Farley, who tries to sway me.
"Cal believes that change is not worth the cost," he says.
His voice shakes, quivering with nerves and conviction. "And he's going to rule one day. Do you want to let him be the future?"
For once, my answer is easy.
"No."
Farley nods, pleased.
"Walsh and Holland," she jerks her head toward them, "tell me there's going to be a little party here."
"The ball," Maven offers.
"It's an impossible target," I snap. "Everyone will have guards. The Queen will know if something goes wrong."
"She will not," Maven breaks in, almost scoffing at the idea. "My mother is not all powerful as she would want you to believe. Even she has limits."
"Limits? The Queen?"
Just the thought makes my mind run wild.
"How can you say that? You know what she can do. I know that in the middle of a ball, with so many voices and thoughts swirling around her, she'll be useless. and so long as we stay out of her path, give her no reason to prod, she won't know a thing. The same goes for the eagry eyes. They won't be looking ahead for trouble, and so they won't see it. He turns back to Farley, his spine straight as an arrow. Silvers might be strong, but we are not invincible. It can be done. Farley nods smoothly, smiling with her teeth. We'll be in contact again once things are set in motion. Can I ask something in return? I blurt, reaching out to grab her arm. My friend, the one I came to you about before, wants to join the guard. But you can't let him. Just make sure he doesn't get involved in any of this. Gently, she peels my fingers from her arm as regret clouds her eyes. I hope you don't mean me. To my horror, one of her shadowy guards steps forward. The red rag around his face doesn't hide the set of his broad shoulders or the ratty shirt I've seen 1,000 times, but the steely look in his eyes, the determination of a man twice his age, is something I don't recognize at all. Killorn looks years away already, Scarlet Guard to the bone, willing to fight and die for the cause. He's red as the dawn. No, I whisper, drawing back from Farley. Now I can only see Killorn running full speed toward his doom. You know what happened to Shade. You can't do this. He pulls away the rag and reaches out to embrace me, but I step away. His touch feels like a betrayal. Mare, you don't have to keep trying to save me. I will as long as you won't. How can he expect to be anything but a human shield? How can he do this? Far away, something hums at me, growing louder by the second, but I barely notice. I'm more focused on keeping the tears from falling in front of Farley and the guard and Maven. Killorn, please. He darkens at my words, like they're an insult rather than a young girl's plea. You made your choice, and I'm making mine. I made the choice for you, to keep you safe, I snap. It's amazing how easily we fall back into our old rhythm, bickering like always. But there's much more on the line now. I can't just shove him into the mud and walk away. I bargained for you. You're doing what you think will protect me, Mare, he mutters, his voice a low rumble. So let me do what I can to save you. My eyes squeeze shut, letting my heartache take over. I've been protecting Killorn every day since his mother left, since he almost starved to death in my doorway. And now he won't let me, no matter how dangerous the future has become. Slowly, I open my eyes again. Do what you want, Killorn. My voice is cold and mechanical, like the wires and circuits trying to switch back on. The power's coming back soon. We should be on the move. The others spring into action, disappearing into the conservatory, and Walsh takes me by the arm. Killorn backs away, following the others into the shadows, but his eyes stay on me. Mare, he calls after me. At least say goodbye. But I'm already walking, Maven by my side, Walsh leading us both. I won't look back. Not now, when he's betrayed all I've ever done for him. Time moves slowly when you're waiting for something good, so naturally the days fly by as the dreaded ball approaches. A week passes without any contact, leaving Maven and me in the dark as the hours march on. More training, more protocol, more brainless lunches that almost leave me in tears. Every time I have to lie, to praise the Silvers and rip down my own, only the guard keeps me strong. Lady Blano scolds me for being distracted in protocol. I don't have the heart to tell her that, distracted or not, I'll never be able to learn the dance steps she's trying to teach for the parting ball. As suited as I might be to sneaking, I'm horrible with rhythmic motion. Meanwhile, the once dreaded training is an outlet for all my anger and stress, allowing me to run or spark off everything I'm trying to keep inside. But just when I'm finally beginning to get the hang of things, the mood of training shifts drastically. Evangeline and her lackeys don't snipe at me, instead focusing intently on their warm-ups. Even Maven goes through his stretches more carefully, like he's preparing for something.
"What's going on?" I ask him, nodding to the rest of the class. My eyes linger on Cal, currently doing push-ups in perfect form.
"You'll see in a minute," Maven replies, his voice oddly dull.
When Arvin enters with Provos, even he has a strange spring in his step. He doesn't bark out in order to run and approaches the class instead.
"Tarana," Instructor Arvin murmurs.
A girl in a blue-striped suit, the nymph from House of Sanos, jumps to attention. She makes her way toward the center of the floor, waiting for something. She looks equal parts excited and terrified. Arvin turns, searching through us. For a second, his eyes linger on me, but thankfully shift to Maven.
"Prince Maven, if you please."
He gestures to where Tarana waits. Maven nods and moves to stand beside her, both of them tense, fingers twitching as they await whatever's coming. Suddenly, the training floor moves around them, pushing clear walls up to form something. Again, Provos raises his arms, using his abilities to transform the training hall. As the structure takes shape, my heart hammers, realizing exactly what it is. An arena. Cal takes Maven's place at my side, his movements quick and silent.
"They won't hurt each other," he explains.
"Arvin stops us before anyone can do real damage, and there are healers on hand."
"Comforting," I choke out.
In the center of the quickly forming arena, both Maven and Tarana prepare for their match. Maven's bracelet sparks, and fire blazes in his hands, streaking up his arms while droplets of moisture leach from the air to swirl around Tarana in a ghostly display. Both of them look ready for battle. Something about my unease sets Cal on edge.
"Is Maven the only thing you're worried about?"
"Not even close. Protocol's not exactly easy right now. I'm not lying, but on my list of problems, learning to dance is at the very bottom. It seems I'm even worse at dancing than memorizing court etiquette." To my surprise, Cal laughs loudly.
"You must be horrible."
"Well, it's difficult to learn without a partner," I snap, bristling at him.
"Indeed."
The last two pieces lock together, completing the training arena and fencing in Maven and his opponent. Now they're separated from the rest of us by thick glass, trapped together in a miniature version of a battle arena. The last time I watched Silver's fight, someone almost died.
"Who has the advantage?"
Arvin says, questioning the class. Every hand but mine shoots into the air.
"Elaine."
The Haven girl juts her chin forward, speaking proudly. "Tarana has the advantage. She is older and more experienced." Elaine says this like it's the most obvious thing in the world. Maven's cheeks flush white, though he tries to hide it. "And water defeats fire."
"Very good."
Arvin shifts his eyes back to Maven, daring him to argue. But Maven holds his tongue, letting the growing fire speak for him.
"Impress me."
They collide, spitting fire and rain in a duel of the elements. Tarana uses her water like a shield, and to Maven's fiery attacks, it's impenetrable. Every time he gets close to her, swinging with flaming fists, he comes back with nothing but steam. The battle looks even, but somehow Maven seems to have the edge. He's on the offensive, backing her into a wall. All around us, the class cheers, goading on the warriors. I used to be disgusted by displays like this, but now I'm having a hard time keeping quiet. Every time Maven attacks, closer to pinning down Tarana, it's all I can do not to cheer with the others.
"It's a trap, Mavy," Cal whispers more to himself than anyone.
"What is it? What's she going to do?" Cal shakes his head.
"Just watch. She's got him."
But Tarana looks anything but victorious. She's flat against the wall, dueling hard behind her watery shield as she blocks blow after blow. I don't miss the lightning-quick moment as Tarana literally turns the tide on Maven. She grabs his arm and pulls, spinning around so they trade places in a heartbeat. Now it's Maven behind her shield, pinned between the water and the wall. But he can't control the water, and it presses against him, holding him back even as he tries to burn it away. The water only boils, bubbling over his blazing skin. Tarana stands back, watching him struggle with a smile on her face.
Yield? A stream of bubbles escapes Maven's lips. Yield. The water drops from him, vaporizing back into the air to the sound of applause. Provost waves a hand again, and one of the arena walls slides back. Tirana gives a tiny bow while Maven trudges out of the circle, a soggy, pouting mess.
I challenge Elaine Haven,
Sonia Ural says sharply, trying to get the words out before our instructor can pair her with someone else. Arvin nods, allowing the challenge, before turning his gaze on Elaine. To my surprise, she smiles and saunters toward the arena, her long red hair swaying with the movement.
I accept your challenge, Elaine replies, taking a spot in the center of the arena. I hope you've learned some new tricks.
Sonia follows, eyes dancing. She even laughs. You'd think I'd tell you if I did. Somehow they manage to giggle and smile right up until Elaine Haven disappears entirely and grabs Sonia around the throat. She chokes, gasping for air, before twisting in the invisible girl's arms and slipping away. Their match devolves quickly into a deadly, violent game of cat and invisible mouse. Maven doesn't bother to watch, angry with himself over his performance. Yes, he says to Cal, and his brother launches headfirst into a hushed lecture. I get the feeling this is normal. Don't corner someone better than you, it makes them more dangerous, he says, putting an arm around his brother's shoulder. You can't beat her with ability, so beat her with your head. I'll keep that in mind, Maven mutters, begrudging the advice but taking it all the same. You're getting better, though, Cal murmurs, patting Maven on the shoulder. He means well but comes off as patronizing. I'm surprised Maven doesn't snap at him, but he's used to this, like I was used to Gisa. Thanks, Cal, I think he gets it, I say, speaking for Maven. His older brother isn't stupid and takes the hint with a frown. With nothing but a backward glance at me, Cal leaves us to stand with Evangeline. I wish he wouldn't, just so I wouldn't have to watch her smirk and gloat. Not to mention I get this strange twist in my stomach every time he looks at her. Once he's out of earshot, I nudge Maven with my shoulder. He's right, you know. You have to outsmart people like that. In front of us, Sonia grabs onto what seems like air and slams it against the wall. Silver liquid spatters, and Elaine flutters back into visibility, a trail of blood streaming from her nose. He's always right when it comes to the arena, he rumbles, strangely upset. Just wait and see. Across the arena, Evangeline smiles at the murderous display between us. How she can watch her friends bleeding on the floor, I don't know. Silvers are different, I remind myself. Their scars don't last. They don't remember pain. With skin healers waiting in the wings, violence has taken on a new meaning for them. A broken spine, a split stomach, it doesn't matter. Someone will always come to fix you. They don't know the meaning of danger or fear or pain. It's only their pride that can be truly hurt. You are silver. You are Marina Titanos. You enjoy this. Cal's eyes dart between the girls, studying them like a book or a painting, rather than a moving mass of blood and bone. Beneath the black cut of his training suit, his muscles tense, ready for his turn. And when it comes, I understand what Maven means. Instructor Arvin pits Cal against two others, the Windweaver, Oliver, and Serene Macanthos, a girl who turns her skin to stone. It's a match in name only. Despite being outnumbered, Cal toys with the other two. He incapacitates them one at a time, trapping Oliver in a swirl of fire while trading blows with Serene. She looks like a living statue, made of solid rock rather than flesh. But Cal's stronger. His blows splinter her rocky skin, sending spider cracks through her body with every punch. This is just practice to him. He almost looks bored. He ends the match when the arena explodes into a churning inferno that even Maven steps back from. By the time the smoke and fire clears, both Oliver and Serene have yielded, their skin cracks in bits of burned flesh, but neither cries out. Cal leaves them both behind, not bothering to watch as a skin healer appears to fix them up. He saved me. He brought me home. He broke the rules for me. and he's a merciless soldier, the heir to a bloody throne. Cal's blood might be silver, but his heart is black as burned skin. When his eyes trail to mine, I force myself to look away, instead of letting his warmth, his strange kindness, confuse me. I commit the inferno to memory. Cal is more dangerous than all of them put together. I cannot forget that. Evangeline, Andros, Arvin clips, nodding at the pair of them. Andros deflates, almost annoyed at the prospect of fighting, and losing to Evangeline, but dutifully trudges into the arena. To my surprise, Evangeline doesn't budge. "No," she says boldly, planting her feet. When Arvin whirls to her, his voice rises above his usual whisper, and it cuts like a razor. "I beg your pardon, Lady Samos?" She turns her black eyes on me, and her gaze is sharp as any knife. "I challenge Marina Titanos." 17. "Absolutely not," Maven rumbles. "She's been training for only 2 weeks. You'll cut her apart." In response, Evangeline just shrugs, letting a lazy smirk rise to her features. Her fingers dance against her leg, and I can almost feel them like claws across my skin. "So what if she does?" Sonya breaks in, and I think I see a gleam of her grandmother in her eye. "The healers are here. There'll be no harm done. Besides, if she's going to train with us, she might as well do it properly, right?" "No harm done," I scoff in my head. "No harm but my blood exposed for all to see." My heartbeat thumps in my head, quickening with every passing second. Overhead, the lights shine brightly, illuminating the ring. My blood will be hard to hide, and they'll see me for what I am. The Red, the liar, the thief. "I'd like some more time observing before I get in the ring, if you don't mind," I reply, trying my best to sound silver. Instead, my voice quavers. Evangeline catches it. "Too scared to fight?" she goads, lazily flicking a hand. One of her knives, a little thing like a tooth of silver, circles her wrist slowly in open threat. "Poor little lightning girl." "Yes," I want to scream. "Yes, I am scared, but silvers don't admit things like that. Silvers have their pride, their strength, and nothing else." "When I fight, I intend to win," I say instead, throwing her words back in her face. "I'm not a fool, Evangeline, and I cannot win yet." "Training outside the ring can only get you so far, Marina," Sonya purrs, latching onto my lie with glee. "Don't you agree, instructor? How can she ever expect to win if she doesn't try?" Arvin knows there's something different about me, a reason for my ability and my strength. But what that is, he cannot fathom, and there's a glint of curiosity in his eye. He wants to see me in the ring as well. And my only allies, Cal and Maven, exchange worried glances, wondering how to proceed across such shaky ground. Didn't they expect this? Didn't they think it would come to this? Or maybe this is what I've been headed for all along. An accidental death in training, another lie for the queen to tell, a fitting death for the girl who doesn't belong. It's a trap I willingly stepped into. The game will be over, and everyone I love will have lost. Lady Titanos is the daughter of a dead war hero, and you can do nothing but tease her. Cal growls, throwing daggered glances at the girls. They barely seem to notice, almost laughing at his poor defense. He might be a born fighter, but he's at a loss when it comes to words. Sonya is even more incensed, her sly nature taking hold. Whereas Cal is a warrior in the ring, she is a soldier of speech, and twists his words with frightening ease. "A general's daughter should do well in the ring. If anything, Evangeline should be afraid." "She wasn't raised by a general. Don't be foolish," Maven sneers. He's much better at this sort of thing, but I cannot let him win my battles. Not with these girls. "I will not fight," I say again. "Challenge someone else." When Evangeline smiles, her teeth white and sharp, my old instincts ring in my head like a bell. I barely have time to drop as her knife burns through the air, cutting through the spot where my neck was seconds before. "I challenge you," she snaps, and another blade flies at my face. More rise from her belt, ready to cut me to ribbons. "Evangeline, stop!" Maven shouts, and Cal pulls me to my feet, his eyes alive with worry. My blood sings, coursing with adrenaline, my pulse so loud I almost miss his whispered words. "You're faster. Keep her on the run. Don't be afraid." Another knife blazes by, this time digging into the ground at my feet. "Don't let her see you bleed." Over his shoulder, Evangeline prowls like a predatory cat, a glittering storm of knives in her fist. In that instant, I know nothing and no one will stop her, not even the princess, and I cannot give her the chance to win. I cannot lose. A bolt of lightning escapes me, streaking through the air at my command. It hits her in the chest, and she staggers back, colliding with the outer wall of the arena. But instead of looking angry, Evangeline regards me with glee. "This will be quick, little lightning girl," she snarls, wiping away a trickle of silver blood. All around, the other students draw back, glancing between the two of us. This could be the last time they see me alive. No, I think again. I cannot lose. My focus intensifies, deepening my sense of power, until it's so strong I hardly notice the walls shifting around us. With a click, Provost reforms the arena, locking us in together, a red girl and a smiling silver monster. She grins across at me, and razor-thin pieces of metal peel off the floor, shaped to her will. They curl and shudder and scrape into a living nightmare. Her usual blades are gone, tossed aside for a new tactic. The metal things, creatures of her mind, skitter across the floor to stop at her feet. Each one has 8 razored legs, sharp and cruel. They quiver as they wait to be released, to cut me apart. Spiders. A horrible crawling sensation prickles my skin, like they're already upon me. Sparks come to life in my hands, dancing between my fingers. The lights flicker as the energy in the room bleeds into me like water soaking into a sponge. Power races through me, driven by my own strength and by need. I will not die here. On the other side of the wall, Maven smiles, but his face is pale, afraid. Next to him, Cal doesn't move. A soldier doesn't blink until the battle is won. "Who has the advantage?" Instructor Arvin asks. "Marina or Evangeline?" No one raises a hand, not even Evangeline's friends. Instead, they stare between us, watching our abilities grow. Evangeline's smile fades into a sneer. She's used to being favored, to being the one everyone's afraid of. And now she's angrier than ever. Again, the lights flicker on and off as my body hums like an overloaded wire. In the flashing darkness, her spiders scrabble over the floor, their metal legs clanging in terrible harmony. And then all I know is fear and power and the surge of energy in my veins. Darkness and light explode back and forth, plunging us both into a strange battle of flickering color. My lightning bursts through the darkness, streaking purple and white as it shatters through spiders at every turn. Cal's advice echoes in my head, and I keep moving, never sticking to one spot on the floor long enough for Evangeline to hurt me. She weaves through her spiders, dodging my sparks as best she can. Jagged metal tears at my arms, but the leather suit holds firm. She's fast, but I'm faster, even with spiders clawing around my legs. For a second, her infuriating silver braid passes through my fingertips before she's out of reach again. But I've got her on the run. I'm winning. I hear Maven through the shriek of metal and cheering classmates, roaring for me to finish her. The lights flash, making her hard to spot, but for a brief moment, I feel what it's like to be one of them, to feel strength and power, absolutely, to know you can do what millions can't. Evangeline feels like this every day, and now it's my turn. I'll teach you what it's like to know fear. A fist slams against the small of my back, shooting pain through the rest of my body. My knees buckle with the agony, sending me to the ground. Evangeline pauses above me, her smile surrounded by a messy curtain of silver hair.
"Like I said," she snarls, "quick."
My legs move on their own, swinging out in a maneuver I've used in the back alleys of the stilts 100 times, even on Killorn once or twice. My foot connects with her leg, sweeping it out from under her, and she crashes to the floor next to me. I'm on her in a second, despite the exploding pain in my back. My hands crackle with hot energy, even as they collide against her face. Pain sears through my knuckle bones, but I keep going, wanting to see sweet silver blood.
"You'll wish it was quick," I roar, bearing down on her.
Somehow, through her bruising lips, Evangeline manages to laugh. The sound melts away, replaced by metallic screeching, and all around us, the fallen, electrified spiders twitch to life. Their metal bodies reform, weaving together at the seams, into a ruinous, smoking beast. It skitters with surprising speed, knocking me off her. I'm the one pinned now, looking up at the heaving, twisting shards of metal. The sparks die in my hands, driven away by fear and exhaustion. Even the healers won't be able to save me after this. A razor leg drags across my face, drawing red, hot blood. I hear myself scream, not in pain, but defeat. This is the end. And then, a blazing arm of fire knocks the metal monster off me, burning it into nothing more than a charred black pile of ash. Strong hands pull me to my feet, and then go to my hair, pulling it across my face to hide the red mark that could betray me. I turn into Maven, letting him walk me from the training room. Every inch of me shakes, but he keeps me steady and moving. A healer comes my way, but Cal heads him off, blocking my face from his sight. Before the door slams behind us, I hear Evangeline yelling, and Cal's usually calm voice yelling right back, roaring over her like a storm. My voice breaks when I finally speak again.
The cameras can see.
Sentinel sworn to my mother, man the cameras. Trust me, they aren't what we should be worrying about, Maven says, almost tripping over his words. He keeps a tight grip on my arm, like he's afraid I might be pulled away from him. His hand ghosts over my face, wiping away the blood with his sleeve. If anyone sees, take me to Julian. Julian's a fool, he mutters. Figures appear at the far end of the hall, a pair of roaming nobles, and he pushes us down a service passage to avoid them.
Julian knows who I am, I whisper back, grabbing onto him.
As his grip tightens, so does mine.
Julian will know what to do.
Maven looks down on me, conflicted, but finally nods. By the time we reach Julian's quarters, the bleeding has stopped, but my face is still a mess. He opens the door on the first knock, looking his usual haphazard self. To my surprise, he frowns at Maven.
Prince Maven, he says, bending into a stiff, almost insulting bow.
Maven doesn't respond, only pushes me past Julian into the sitting room beyond. Julian has a small set of rooms made smaller by darkness and stale air. The curtains are drawn, blotting out the afternoon sun, and the floor is slippery with loose stacks of paper. A kettle simmers in the corner, on an electric piece of metal meant to replace a stove. No wonder I never see him outside of lessons. He appears to have everything he needs right here.
What's going on?
He asks, waving us to a pair of dusty chairs. Obviously, he doesn't entertain much. I take a seat, but Maven refuses, still standing. I draw aside my curtain of hair, revealing the shining red flag of my identity. Evangeline got carried away. Julian shifts, uncomfortable on his own 2 feet. But it's not me making him squirm. It's Maven. The two glare at each other, at odds over something I don't understand. Finally, he turns his gaze back on me.
I'm not a skin healer, Mare. The best I can do is clean you up.
I told you, Maven says. He can't do anything. Julian's lip curls into a snarl.
Find Sarah Skonos, he snaps, his jaw tightening as he waits for Maven to move.
I've never seen Maven this angry, not even with Cal. But then, it's not anger spilling out from Maven or Julian. It's hate. They absolutely despise each other. Do it, my prince. The title sounds like a curse coming from Julian's lips. Maven finally concedes and slips out the door. What's that all about? I whisper, gesturing between Julian and the door. Not now, he says, and tosses me a white cloth to clean myself with. It stains a dark red as my blood ruins the fabric. Who's Saraskonos? Again, Julian hesitates. A skin healer. She'll take care of you, he sighs. And she's a friend. A discreet friend. I didn't know Julian had friends beyond me in his books, but I don't question him. When Maven slips back into the room a few moments later, I've managed to clean my face properly, though it still feels sticky and swollen. I'll have a few bruises to hide tomorrow, and I don't even want to know what my back looks like now. Gingerly, I touch the growing lump where Evangeline punched me. Sarah's not... Maven pauses, mulling over the words. She's not who I would have chosen for this. Before I can ask why, the door opens, revealing the woman I assume is Sarah. She enters silently, barely raising her eyes. Unlike the others, the Blanos blood healers, her age is displayed proudly on her face, in every wrinkle and her sunken hollow cheeks. She looks to be about Julian's age, but her shoulders droop in a way that tells me her life has felt far longer than his. Nice to meet you, Lady Skonos. My voice is calm. There's the Blanos blood healers. Her age is displayed proudly on her face, in every wrinkle and her sunken hollow cheeks. She looks to be about Julian's age, but her shoulders droop in a way that tells me her life has felt far longer than his. Nice to meet you, Lady Skonos. My voice is calm, like I'm asking about the weather. Seems my protocol lessons might be sinking in after all. But Sarah doesn't respond. Instead, she drops to her knees in front of my chair and takes my face in her rough hands. Her touch is cool, like water on a sunburn, and her fingers trail over the gash on my cheek with surprising gentleness. She works diligently, healing over the other bruises on my face. Before I can mention my back, she slips a hand down to the injury, and something like soothing ice bleeds through the pain. It's all over in a few moments, and I feel like I did when I first came here. Better, in fact. My old aches and bruises are completely gone. Thank you, I say, but again, I get no response. Thank you, Sarah. Julian breathes, and her eyes dart to his in a flash of gray color. Her head bows slightly in the tiniest nod. He reaches forward, a hand brushing her arm as he helps her to her feet. The two of them move like partners in a dance, listening to music no one else can hear. Maven's voice shatters their silence. That will be all, Skonos. Sarah's quiet calm melts into barely concealed anger as she spins out of Julian's grip, scrambling for the door like a wounded animal. The door shuts behind her with a slam, shaking the framed maps in their glass prisons. Even Julian's handshake, trembling long after she's gone, like he can still feel her. He tries to hide it, but not well. Julian was in love with her once, and maybe even still is. He looks at the door like a man haunted, waiting for her to come back. Julian? The longer you're gone, the more people will start to talk, he mutters, gesturing for us to leave. I agree. Maven moves to the door, ready to open it and shove me back out. Are you sure no one saw? My hand moves to my cheek, now smooth and clean. Maven pauses, thinking. No one who would say anything. Secrets don't stay secrets here, Julian mutters. His voice quivers with rare anger. You know that, Your Highness. You should know the difference between secrets, Maven snaps, and lies. His hand closes around my wrist, pulling me back out into the hall before I can bother to ask what's going on. We don't make it far before a familiar figure stops us.
Trouble, dear?
Queen Alara, a vision in silk, addresses Maven. Strangely, she's alone, with no sentinels to guard her.